Good evening and welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, and this evening we'll talk about the African Union's response to crisis on the continent. And with us tonight is a special guest, Dr. Frank Habineza. Dr. Habineza is the president of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda. He's also president of African Green Federation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Habineza.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. And joining us from Durban in South Africa is a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Suleiman, welcome to the show once again. Suleiman, are you there? I think we may have lost Suleiman, but we'll try to get him back online. And as soon as we have him, he'll be able to join us. As I said, our topic tonight is how the African Union handles crisis on the continent. And last week, we had issues in Burkina Faso.
Yes.
The president there, the long-serving president, 27 years in power,
yes,
was actually chased out of the country, took off, and he's now in Ivory Coast. The African Union has come in and has given the current leaders, the Kano who took over power, that they should relinquish power and hand it over to, I don't know who, maybe the opposition. Since you happen to be in the opposition, first of all, that would be a good thing, or maybe they should have allowed for some transition from the Compaoré's leadership to some elected government?
No, first of all, I would like to congratulate the people of Burkina Faso for their brave actions that they were able to stop what was happening, that was the changing of the constitution. Mm. I personally am against the changing of constitutions in that order of having African leaders extending their term of office. I think that when the constitutions are put in place and people put two term limits, there is a reason for that. So that reason is that a leader should be able to do his activities to put in practice his promises in that period. Mm. So if he is not able to do that, then let someone else take place. So we thank, we congratulate the people of Burkina Faso, and I think the power should be given back to the people of the Burkina Faso, and in this case, I think to the opposition, because it was the main catalyst. They are the ones who organized for this to happen. So the military should.
Although I beg to differ, because the opposition has been there for all this time and they have failed. So it was the youth.
No, they did not fail, but there's time for everything.
I see.
I think the timing in the beginning was not the right time, but the right time came, and the opposition was able to mobilize the people, and the people were able to make their message clear. It was loud and clear, and also I congratulate President Compaoré for listening to the people.
Although it took him 27 years.
Exactly, yeah, because it was also nice for him that he was able to listen to the message clearly, and he had to leave the power immediately, yeah, because if he not listen, perhaps it would have been worse.
I see.
Yeah.
Now I'm told we have a regular panelist, Suleiman Mugula, joining us from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. We had lost you. Your line had dropped. You had the tail end of my other guest here saying, hailing the people of Burkina Faso for having achieved what they achieved, although it's a bit tenuous now at this moment, with the army seeming to have taken advantage, according to some people. And here comes our dear friendly body, the African Union, giving ultimatum to the soldiers to hand over power in 2 weeks. Given AU's track record, what if the soldiers said no? What would the AU do?
Actually, we should, in addition to what my colleague has said, we have to congratulate the people of Burkina Faso for giving an example, though we already had the Arab Spring, but we should, for the Sub-Saharan, I think they are the first to take a decisive action against the leadership. My colleague has said that really there is a reason why we have those term limits. To be sincere, Douglas, yes, the term limits are put there. Even if they are not put there, governing a nation is not a child's play. If one feels that it's a joke, you ask Obama, ask Cameroon, ask President Zuma, ask any sensible leader on the continent, he will tell you, after 10 years, I'm done. So really, any sensible person to stay over 10 years, that is absolute corruption and maladministration. A normal human being, intellectually, physically, and institutionally, you cannot take it beyond 10 years. In short, all countries which have gone 10 years, they have taken, after 10 years, the countries take a U-turn and then they go backwards. That is why you see all these leaders who have taken 20 years in power, there is no difference, including Burkina Faso. If you look at the international, the UN development indices, they show you that the country has not moved, regardless of being there for 28 years. Uganda, the same. DRC, the same. Rwanda, there might be some symbolism, but still, sincerely speaking, you'll find staying in power for many years does not help the nation. Instead, it turns it backwards. So what has the AU, if I can go back to our question, what the AU has done? Douglas, AU, the international community, the Americans and so on, they are complices in what has happened. They are part and parcel of the problem which we have in Africa. It is not an accident. What has happened in Burkina Faso is not an accident. It has happened elsewhere. The same confusion happened in Central African Republic. It happened in Libya. It happened in Egypt. The AU itself, it reacts impulsively, uncoordinated, without direction, face-saving, but without precise action. Look at the UN. I mean, the Americans. The Americans issued a statement and they said they don't know whether the situation in Burkina Faso is actually a coup, which is true. Dictators disorganize the country. They hold to power and they become the nations themselves. After they have left, they leave a very big vacuum. And that vacuum is so difficult to fill within a short time. That is why the army intervened immediately in Egypt, because the situation was going out of hand. That is why the soldiers have intervened, not specifically to take power. They have come in to fill in a vacuum which has been left by the abrupt departure of a government which belonged to an individual, or an institution which is belong to an individual. Right now, you can see when they are holding the discussions, the soldiers are willing to cede the power to the people, not because of the threats from the AU, not because of the threats from the Security Council, not because of the threats from the UN. The soldiers were not organized. They were not the one who took over power. They only filled in a vacuum. And the people who overthrew the regime are well organized. They are in the background. They have made it clear to the soldiers that they will not allow their revolution to be hijacked. So whatever is happening, we should not say they have conducted a coup. They have only stepped in a vacuum to stabilize the situation. Otherwise, it would go the Libyan way or the Central African way.
I see. Now, you mentioned if people have stayed in power for 15, 20, 30 years, definitely, the opposition that would ordinarily take over power from the ruling government are destroyed. They don't leave opposition. I mean, the opposition groups in all those countries where leaders have ruled for 20, 30 years are just paper tiger. Now I have a leader of the opposition here, some political party in the opposition in Rwanda. Maybe let's pick his mind on this. If in a country, not specifically your country, but for the sake of this discussion, if a ruling government has been in power for 20, 30 years, how viable is it for an opposition to organize and maybe be able to be ready at the word go to take power?
First of all, I would like to agree with our colleague in South Africa that yes, it's true that that the army, like in the case of Burkina Faso, has acted to fill in the vacuum. because when Blaise left, and after you have to know that before he left, he had dissolved the parliament and dissolved the government. So it meant that before he went, he had not left any constitutional authority to take over, because normally it should have been the president or the speaker of parliament to take over. But in this case, the parliament had been dissolved. So meaning that he had left the country empty, with no official authorities to take over. So the army looked and there was no parliament, there is no government, it's all dissolved in advance. Then the army had to fill in the vacuum, because the opposition would not just walk in the president's office. It doesn't work like that. So basically, if the army was not there, there would have been chaos. And people, maybe it would have been big massacres taking place here. So I think I on that side, I also congratulate the army of Burkina Faso. Like the army of Egypt also, they did well to preserve the institutions here, to preserve the institutions. So, and I just encourage them to respect, as they are not the ones who organized this revolution, to respect the demands of the people and leave power to the people. Yeah, getting back to your question, of course, if a government stays in power for over 10 years, the only thing that makes it stay in power all those years is to kill the opposition. So they make sure that the opposition is weakened, destroyed, denied finances, the members threatened, or in other cases killed, or imprisoned, or exiled. So in that case, the country, of course, why they stay on is because there's no one challenging them. So they, that's the expense. So it's the expense. There's no freedoms of the expression. The journalists have no chance to speak. They have no rights. So basically, the country, the government is unchallenged. They stay on 10, 15, 20 years, and that's the situation. So by the time people are fed up, there's nothing. The opposition is very weakened. You get my point.
Yeah.
So that's the truth. Well, what we need to do is that if really the African governments need to build institutions, to have strong institutions, and to have a good legacy, to make sure that what they do is not really destroyed afterwards. Because if you've been president, it would be nice that you have a chance to stay in your country after you have served. Like, let's say, well, it's not a very good example, but I would give it like Burundi. Despite all the problems in Burundi, Burundi is, I think, one of the best examples that all the presidents who have ruled Burundi, they stay in Burundi. They become part of the Senate, and they are there serving in the Senate. They have security, they have their salaries. So it's like a good example that at least you not be killed or you not have to go to exile. So I think this should be a good example to other countries that you can be president and you can go back to your home region, and you can take care of your cows or your children and your grandchildren, and life can go on. You'll be respected and become at least a reference point. So I encourage all our African leaders to respect their constitutions.
I see. Now, it appears...
Douglas.
Yes?
Sorry to cut you. I wanted to add in something that where I said the AU is part and parcel of the problem, is that the way my colleague there has said, you find that after 10 years, these leaders hold elections. And these elections which they hold are facades of elections. But the AU certifies them, because really, on the continent, we have got charters on democracy. I mean, the AU should be the first to stand firm and say there cannot be a free and fair election unless all the stakeholders, all the opposition and government agree, number one, on the electoral body, the composition of the electoral body, the electoral rules, on the freedom of speech, freedom of association, the fundraising, the financing. And then you can have an election. But here is a situation where they certify an election where the electoral body was not agreed on, the electoral rules were not agreed on, there is no freedom of canvassing for the opposition. Sometimes the opposition, like my friend in Rwanda there, Ngabire, is in prison. In nearby here in Uganda, Kizza Besigye is in and out of police cells. Even in most of these countries, in Gambia, in Cameroon, all these ones, you find that the whole system, the opposition, the so-called opposition, sometimes manufactured by the government itself, it creates a fake opposition. Then it holds on, and the leader win his election, then he wins another election. But the AU is not ashamed to go in those countries and certify elections that they are free and fair. This is where we are now. They are part and parcel of the problem, which is in Burkina Faso, in Central African Republic, in Uganda, in Rwanda, in Cameroon, in Gambia, and elsewhere on the continent.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and then we shall come back to continue our discussion and maybe allow my friend here to respond. And we shall be back right after this short break.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the African Union's response to crisis on the continent. Our panelists are Dr. Frank Habineza, president of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Simpoga, here in Studio 9. Gentlemen, having heard from what both of you just said, some people have, some commentators, some analysts have actually wondered, isn't it asking too much of the African Union to come in and solve such a problem like what's going on in Burkina Faso? Given that, for instance, African Union is actually, it's a membership of those leaders on the continent, more than half of whom their democratic credentials are lacking, for a lack of a better term. So why would they be so concerned in having good governance on the continent, or why would they insist on having free and fair elections when the composition of the organization itself, the members are in the same club? Let me begin here.
Yes. Well, first of all, is that the African Union as an institution has values. It has the values which were put in place. It has the charter, even the charter on democracy and human rights.
And peace and security and
exactly,
all that.
Exactly, yeah. So it's these values that we support, or we subscribe to. Our countries have subscribed to these values, have subscribed to these charters. They have become members. So now there are two things. There are the values, the institution, but also the membership. Mm-hmm. So I think on one side, African Union as an institution is a good thing. As if it upholds its values and its institutions in place and can be able to enforce its decisions, then. But the problem is the membership. Mm-hmm. So I think the membership, of course, there are these leaders, of course, who are also part and parcel of the problem.
Yes.
So, but I think I would like to separate the two: the African Union as an institution and its members. So on one side, I think I agree with our colleague Solomon in South Africa. Yeah, the African Union has. Last time when they came to Kigali for the elections, I was able to chat with them and told them that it's not good to come 1 week before the elections or 2 days before the elections, because really, what are you going to see in 1 week? You know, because these countries, they organize everything in advance. Actually, some, let's say if the election is going to be in 2 years' time, they start, the incumbent president start organizing in advance by giving cows to the people, by giving them goats, by giving them schools water. So they are already campaigning in a different format here. So the campaigning mood starts 2 years in advance. So for you, you just come in 1 week and you just look at the polling stations, you see people on a line. You don't know what is behind those lines. How the people were able to turn up? You know, all that. They don't have any data. So they just make a conclusion that the elections was free and fair, just on based on 2 days or 3 days mm-hmm. visit in the country. Mm-hmm. So basically, I think that if they really want to observe these elections, they should be involved even mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. They should have their missions there before. Let's say if there's we have elections in Burundi next year, let the African Union start getting involved now before mm-hmm. the elections. Let them have a mission there right now in Bujumbura or in Congo and see what is happening, what is the mood of the opposition, what's the mood of the people. Then that way they should start supporting to, the institutions in place to make sure that we have the electoral commission which is functioning, electoral commission which is everyone feels part of. Like in Uganda, the opposition has been asking to be part of the electoral commission. So the electoral commission to be an independent one. So if that is not happening and then you have elections, then don't you expect that elections will be free and fair? Because the one who is conducting the elections is also the one who is going to, who is in control of counting the results of the vote.
You see, that's exactly the point I was trying to raise from some commentators. Take, for instance, Ethiopia, that hosts the African Union headquarters. This is a country now that, according to CPJ, has at least 17 journalists in jail for blogging, for just merely blogging. How can you then, therefore, come around and say you want to promote democracy and freedom of the speech and peace and security when your organization is headquartered in the very country where they're jailing journalists, and then members meet there and have champagne and go away? So what? That's my point, because it's the membership. If the membership, the leaders of the those who are the movers and shakers in the organization, don't express any annoyance about these acts, how then will the organization work? So, Suleiman, what's your take?
Douglas, whether you are talking about the institutional membership, as a continent, we have to understand that a maladministration, whether you take it in terms of peace and security or governance, maladministration in any one country disrupts the economy, disrupts the social life of all countries. A bad governance in Zimbabwe down here is going to bring the economy of South Africa on the ground because of the pressure. In West Africa, the conflicts in Sierra Leone, in Liberia, they nearly put the whole of West Africa down. In East Africa, the conflict in South Sudan now, the conflicts in DRC, you find all the countries are sucked in. Why are we struggling? Central African Republic. So why are the African leaders, Mahama, Macky Sall, and Jonathan, why did they run quickly as ECOWAS? Because they know the economic costs are so high, the political costs are so high, because should chaos erupt in Burkina Faso, all the people are going to scatter in those particular countries.
Let me interrupt you a little bit, Suleiman. They are calling for the Colonel Zida's group to hand over power in 2 weeks. The question is, hand power to who? Is that realistic?
100%. To the transitional government. They are going to hand over. The transitional government, I think, is going to be composed of members of the opposition, mm-hmm. the civil society, and I think even some elements in the ruling party who have, there may be some good elements in the ruling party, mm-hmm. former ruling mm-hmm. party. Yeah. So I think this transitional government, of course, the army should not also be left aside. They should also be part, because they are also people. The question maybe is who is going to be
100% correct.
Yes,
that is where we are blaming the AU. The AU has got no mechanism to intervene. The way you are saying, they give 2 weeks to a chaotic situation instead of behaving the way the United Nations behaved in the Liberian situation when the chaos was reigning between 1989 and 96. In 2003. The United Nations intervened in Liberia, was able to make sure that there is a transitional government. They was able to make ground rules for the transitional government, for example, whereby the head of the transitional government was not even going to contest. So they helped to see a transition going in. Now the AU, if it was sensible enough, it should have gone in the country, engaged the various groups, find a way to find the way a transition will be carried out. the way the three leaders have gone in and they are trying to find a mechanism in which they can have a transition, not simply to say the way they did in Egypt, we are giving you sanction. It shows that the AU has gotten no direction whatsoever. Instead of engaging the leaders and say, what has happened, what is the way forward, how can we prevent chaos to erupt, what system should we use, instead they hold the threaten sanctions. That is why I'm saying they have got no direction. It is impulsive and coordination, and it has got no direction.
Briefly, we're running out of time. You want to respond to that?
Yeah, well, I think that what he's saying is very important. The African Union needs to be very organized and does not need to just act like outsiders. Mm-hmm. They have that. Well, that's why I'm saying that they should now that they have a chance, instead of threatening, giving it 2 weeks at Metam, I think they have the chance now to involve everybody and also to make sure that they bring on board everyone. And that way, they will ensure, also by not putting aside the people of the former government, because if you put them aside, it will become another problem, because as you have seen, that they could become like in Ivory Coast. Mm. The people from the former government, they've become rebels. Yeah. So now I think even the people from Bray's Compromise government should be involved, because they're still citizens of Burkina Faso. So everyone should be brought on board, and then that's the way. And then African Union should stop coming at the last day of the election. They should be coming 1 year before and be involved in advance.
Yeah, talking about 1 year before, we have about a minute left. Why didn't they, for instance, lean on Campoeira to respect his constitution in 10 seconds? That would have solved the problem. If he had respected the constitution and not tried to seek another the amendment of the constitution to allow him for another term, all this would not be happening.
Yes, I think the African Union should put up a mechanism to enforce all the African leaders to respect their constitutions, not to say that every country has its own challenges. No, that's aspect of non-intervention. They don't want to get involved in advance, and they want to involve afterwards when there are problems. I think that is a lack of responsibility.
10 seconds, Suleiman.
Many analysts have in the past said that these dictators are going to destroy the continent, and many international organizations, the UN, the Americans, the AU and others have not listened. They have continued to support dictators who have stayed over 10 years. They give them military support, they give them financial support, loans and so on. They continue to enrich themselves, they continue to oppress their people. People become poorer and poorer. Now the people are fed up. Maybe this is the beginning of the end. I think they have realized that the more they leave these people to go, the more chaos we are going to have on the continent. These leaders are not progressing. They are not taking the countries forward. They are digging the graves for their countries. They are going to destroy them. The people will not wait. The youth will not wait. They are going to burn the parliaments. They are going to burn these towns. They are going to burn their houses unless all the institutions all over the world take a stand and we send off the dictators.
In the last 30 seconds, do you see any future for AU? Because if half of its leaders also have the same mentality, they want to change their constitutions and stay in power forever, how can they lean on others to change to stick the constitution?
I think there's one thing that we should all remember, that no country is an island. We are all part of the international community. So it's not just a responsibility of the AU. It's also a responsibility of the United Nations. It's a responsibility of the Security Council. So it's America, it's UK and others. They all should be involved. So it's not just AU, but Security Council should be involved. They should all enforce that we all respect our constitutions, and the leaders who don't respect our constitution, they should resign.
I see. Well, you have the last word. That wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. Thank you to our special guest, Dr. Frank Habineza, President of the Democratic Green Party of Rwanda. Ms. Habineza, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And thank you to regular panelist Suleiman Mugula, South African-based independent political analyst. Thank you, Suleiman.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Our producer has been Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Keith Holmes. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. In case you missed any part of this program, you can still get it. Just go to our main website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable, and you'll get the whole program right there. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. I'm your host, Douglas Impuga in Washington, wishing you a very wonderful week.
burning up the whole night.